Previously on the Pocket Party Podcast, Darren was watching Little House on the Prairie, and it got too exciting, so he slowed it down by watching The Waltons.
Everybody listen to Darren Carter. Yeah. We all know he's the party starter. So if you want to listen to a podcast for free, then listen to a Pocket Party. Pocket Party.
I like my women like I like my shoes, no strings attached. I like my women like I like my mustard, spicy and yellow when on that wiener. I like my women like I like my elevator going down with the weight limit. Ha ha. I let you guys yell out something. Let's improvise. Here we go. I like my women like I like my
car
jacked up and used. Beep, beep, and horny. I like my women like I like my
horse.
My horse down for some hype. I like my women like I like my
dictionaries.
Ooh, thick, leather bound. By the way, when you said, I'm glad you said airy, because when you said, I thought you were saying dick. I was like, what? He's like, dictionary. Because if you just said dick, I was going to be like, next to my balls. I like my women like I like my...
Comedy.
Comedy, ooh, one coming after the other. I like my... Three more, then we got to go. I like my women like I like my... Boat.
Did you say boat?
You always have to confirm, otherwise he'll think I'm making... Who said rocket ship? Was it you? Did I hear boat?
Yeah.
I like my women like I like my boat. Aye, full of semen. On a scale of 1 to 10, how awkward is this hearing these jokes next to your parents? 1 to 10. 12.
Pocket Party.
And we're back kicking your week off again with the Pocket Party Podcast. We've got Mr. Mike Black on the line. I am calling in to Mr. Mike Black. Let's see how his week went.
Hello.
Hello. Is this the one and only Mr. Mike Black?
Yep.
How are you, my friend? I feel like I'm bringing you over to the country bumpkin side. You kind of sounded country there.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw, I'm just working on my wagon wheel.
No, working on rehydrating. I'm all... Whenever I wake up, I'm always like just dried out here in Southern California.
Oh, yeah, between the hot sun and then cranking the AC and
yeah.
You know, I think that's what... They always recommend drinking a big glass of water right when you wake up. So I try to do that. I force the water, yeah. Like, you know.
I used to do it right before bed, and then I got old, and it was like, nah, I have to wake up in the middle of the night to pee. So yeah. I don't do it anymore.
I know. I find also when I fly, like, I try to, you know, I mean, you don't want to do it right before you get on the plane, because then you got to keep getting up and same thing, but... Before I fly, the first thing I do is I drink extra water because I find that I get headaches sometimes. Like if I have a long flight and I haven't drinking that much water. And
if you're flying like out of L.A., almost everyone that you're flying with is from L.A. And so they're real aggressive sort of people, you know, because they've survived the past 3 years.
Yeah.
And so, like, you get up once to go to the bathroom, and they're looking at you like, is this going to be a problem the whole flight? Easy.
I know.
One time.
I know. I usually I'm pretty fortunate. I can just get a window seat and just sleep the whole way, and that's the best. Where you...
Yeah.
You know, I've actually fallen asleep before the runway, where we're still on the runway, and I'm like, oh, did we land yet? And we haven't even taken off yet. I'm like, what the heck?
You know? I've fallen asleep talking to you.
Some people are listening to this podcast on an airplane, falling asleep, and yes, we thank you. Exactly.
If you're a nervous flyer, just tune into this podcast. You're all set.
Rockabye listeners.
They're like, oh, he's talking about Little House again? I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out. Yeah, this last time I flew, oh my gosh, it was probably some of the longest flights I had since I've talked to you. I get this. I took Southwest Airlines, and I love Southwest.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go out of LAX, so I flew out of Burbank, and to get to Florida, I flew Burbank to San Jose, San Jose to Nashville, Nashville to Fort Myers, and then they picked me up, and then I went to the hotel. But it was like, man, it was a long day. And on the way back, it was Fort Myers to Ohio, Ohio to Phoenix, Phoenix to Burbank. And it was a long day. Yeah, because, and I don't even think it was a a price thing. It was the amount of flights that were going into that town that I had to get to. And they all landed at like 10 o'clock at night. So I'm like, well, I guess I got to go a day early. And
yeah,
that was the time that I did not sleep all the way. In fact, dude, there's nothing worse than being on a flight where you're like, there's no Wi-Fi on the plane. Like that, it just didn't, right. I didn't have Wi-Fi. And so I didn't have anything to occupy myself, man. Like, you know, usually you have things downloaded and stuff.
Yeah. If you're not able to sleep, if you know, you've got to be up for a layover or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there looking at the back of your chair.
Dude, that's what I did. I sat there looking at the back of the chair I was in the window seat, and it was a full flight. And yeah. I was like, man, I am so bored. And I would try to, I couldn't sleep. And then eventually I was just looking at my phone, going through like old photos. And then that got boring after about an hour. And then you're like, so then I end up going through old text messages. I'm like, oh, this is kind of interesting. Like scrolling all the way back, like as far as it would go. And just, you know,
the Southwest people are like taking pity on you. They're like, we brought you some extra pretzels.
Dude, they did that.
It was so sad.
They did. They gave me like four bags of pretzels and like two. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I had all these salty treats. And then, by the way, so on the flight back to LA, I was like, well, this time I'll be prepared. So I got a Reader's Digest because I figured it's small and you could like read it.
Right.
Dude, I read the entire Reader's Digest. It was so boring. I got to be honest with you. It wasn't their most exciting issue.
I don't think they have a most exciting issue. It's Reader's Digest. It's literally made for people too lazy to read.
I know. I was like, just give me the cliff notes. And
yeah, you'll never see on the cover our most exciting issue.
Exactly. Banned in 10 states.
Right, yeah.
Right. So, Tittle, by the way, we did...
Reader's Digest Erotica Edition is never coming out.
I'm like asking the flight attendant, can I have another pillow, please? I don't even know if they have pillows anymore.
Could you imagine the Reader's Digest of the Kama Sutra? Four positions.
We just cut to the chase. Yeah. One
it's
position.
Pretty much just missionary.
I know. My friend used to call it the Boobs Bible.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but not for that reason, not because there was boobs in there. It was for, like, the common man.
Right, yeah.
They, by the way, we watched, believe it or not, we did watch Little House on the Prairie again. And and it was funny because at the end, my son applauded. He clapped at the end of the episode. And he said, you know what? He goes, it's one of those shows where, he goes, I didn't think it would be interesting because it's like about farmers in the 1800s. But at the end, he goes, I found myself clapping. It was so good.
Well, what happened on this applause-worthy episode?
The applause-worthy episode. Well, just so you know, I did watch the second part of part one, and we'll get to that. But this particular episode, I may have told you about this one before, but I'll say it again. Or maybe I didn't. It was about this kid. He lives in Chicago. His father was abusive. Father comes back from the docks. And the minute like he starts rattling the doorknob to open the door, the mom jumps up, boom, goes over to the stove. She starts giving him the soup. And then he looks at her and he goes, there's no meat in my soup.
Yeah.
And she looks at him and she's like, well, we'll call him, I don't know, Clarence. She goes, Clarence, I do the best with what you give me. And that just drives him up the wall. He gets so he looks at her like, you know. And he goes, where's the boy? And she goes, he went to bed. He goes, now get down. And he goes, get down here. And the boy comes down. I think he's 6 years old at this point. And he's got a little hole in his shirt. And he goes, what's wrong with your shirt? And he goes, I tore it. Well, if you're going to tear it all the way. And he grabs it and just rips the sleeve off. And and then he slaps the boy. Bam, slaps him. And she's like, she looks at him. She's like, Clarence. And he goes, and and also she had asked him, how did work? Did you find work today? Because he had to go down, you know, they had to go to like this central place to get chosen to work on the docks. And he's like, that's my business. And he goes, and then they cut to, they show the boy crying, the mom hugging him. And the father's like, you're always coddling him, even though he just slapped him. Then he goes down to the docks, and then you see him begging, like, what would be in our world, the booker, the comedy club booker. He's like, how come you never picked me? He goes, you should have chose me. You chose me last. And the guy goes, well, I can't play favorites. And he goes, favorites? I've been coming down. And then he punches the boss guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Falls down, and then he goes to punch him again, and that's when, like, the booker or the boss shoots him, kills him dead. Cut to, they knock on the door. The sheriff's like, do you recognize this wallet? Well, I'm sorry to tell you, but he's been killed. And the mom, the wife, starts crying. And then they pan to the little boy. And he looks down, but then he kind of looks up with like a smile. Because the little boy, one of the last things he said to his dad was, I hate you! I hate you! Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Cut to, you go to the little house on the prairie town. And there was an old couple at the local store, and the grandma and the grandpa, or actually the grandpa's there, and he sees Charles Ingalls, a.k.a. Michael Landon, and he goes, right. I just got a note from my daughter. Mike, our grandson's coming to live with us. And now he's 17.
And, okay.
Yeah, and he...
He's 17, and he thinks God listens to whatever he tells him to do. He's like, kill my dad, okay.
Right, exactly. I know. He comes through, and... the first thing he does is he sees little Albert, one of the little boys, and he goes over to him and he goes, hey, every town has an idiot. Are you the village idiot? And the little boy, the little boy's like, I don't think so. You know, he's like, and he goes, where do the Stevensons live? Or whatever their last name is, his grandparents. And basically what I'm trying to tell you is this boy is like a bad kid from Chicago, and it turns out the mom couldn't handle him anymore, so she sends him to the grandparents, to live with the grandparents.
Oh, okay.
And then the next day, the grandpa's like waking him up. Come on, rise and shine. We get up early on the farm. And he starts shaking him, and then he pulls the covers off, and then the boy stands up and shoves his grandpa down. Boom, he falls.
Wow.
Right then, the grandma comes into the room. She goes, what happened? Oh, nothing, Ma. I just fell. Nothing happened. He's covering for him, right?
Wow.
Yeah, cut to another thing happens and another thing. And then they invite him to church. And he's like, God didn't live in our apartment. He passed by our neighborhood. You know, he killed my dad and this and that. And I had to work on the dock since I was a teenager and, you know, whatever. So it's like, eventually they kind of coerce him. Like, well, can you come to the picnic afterwards, like after church? So he goes to the picnic and he's hanging out. Laura Ingalls tries to make friends with them, the little girl, and he blows her off. He's kind of mean. He goes to get some lemonade. There's no lemonade. And they haven't caught on that he's a bad...
Oh, no, there's no lemonade.
Yeah. They haven't caught on that he's a bad kid yet.
Will it ever end?
I know, exactly. Oh, God, you keep passing my neighborhood. Even the lemonade is gone. The mom, Laura Ingalls' mom, and Charles, you know, his wife, she's like, well, there's some lemonade inside. And he walks inside their house, and he's alone in there. And then the music changes. And that's when my son was like, why are they playing suspenseful music?
Yeah.
And we're like, hold on, Austin. It's about to go down. And that's right. When he pours some lemonade. And then he looks over on the fireplace mantle, and he sees a pocket watch. And he picks it up. Puts it down, he takes two steps, and he goes back and he swipes it, sticks it in his pocket. And it was Charles Ingalls' watch that he just got back from the jeweler, and it's a family heirloom, blah, blah, blah. Right. Later that night, Charles is like, hey, have you seen my stopwatch or my pocket watch? He's like, no. And then they can't. And then it dawns on them, like, the only person in here was you know who.
The lunatic that came into town.
From Chicago. Because they're like, well, none of our friends would have stolen it. And they're like, Cut to the next morning. The dude's grandpa, he sees him. And, of course, the pocket watch is sticking out of his pocket. And he goes, where'd you get that? And then he punches him. Never mind. None of your business. It's like, yeah, that's, dude.
I love that response. I'll just punch him.
I know. And then, so then the grandpa, they cut to the grandpa. He's got like a, you know, a stake on his eye or whatever. And the grandma's like, I can't believe it. And that's when they both realize, like, it's really sad, actually. The grandma goes, I wish we would have just had the memory of him when he was a little boy. This is so, like, you know, just seeing him as a full-grown, like, almost man.
Yeah.
Like, the way he turned out. It's so sad.
I wish we hadn't abused his father, who then in turn abused him.
I know.
Now that I think about it, violence has a chain reaction.
Although
we might be terrible people.
I know. Although, I think the daughter married what am I, a fact checker? Yeah. Let's just go with the jokes, Darren. Okay. Yeah. Actually, Mike, what happened was I went from a Darren to a Karen right there. You heard it here, folks. He's a Karen, actually. So then Charles, he has to confront the grandparents and tell them what happened. So he knocks on the door, and the grandpa's like, I don't want Charles to see me like this. So he hides in the staircase.
Yeah.
Charles says what happened. The pocket watch is missing. And that's when the grandpa can't stand it anymore. And he comes out and he confesses. He goes, Charles, he stole your watch. And then Charles
Our
goes,
grandson is a dipshit.
Exactly. And he goes, and what happened to your face? Oh my God. And then they told him what happened. Charles is like, I got to do something. So Charles finds out where he's at. Yeah. Apparently the boy's out gambling at this other town. Charles walks in and he goes, I want to talk to you, and I want my pocket watch right now. And the kid's like, I don't have it. I just traded it. And he's playing poker against someone. He goes, well, get it back. And then he's like, well, I'm down by $10. So then Charles gives the guy $10. They give the watch to Charles. And then he tells the kid, he goes, by the way, the kid's 17. He's almost 18. He goes,
right.
You got two choices. You come and work on my farm to pay me back that $10, or I go to the sheriff's and you go to jail. And the guy looks at him and he goes, I'll go to jail. So then Charles grabs him by the arm, drags him. He's in jail, lets him spend a night in jail, comes back the next day. And he's like, it's your last chance. Come work on my farm or stay here in jail. And he looks around the other prisoners. He's like, all right, I'll work for you. And of course, now he starts doing the chores, working for him.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. How long are you going to work? How long do I got to do this work? Well, till the money's paid off, blah, blah, blah. Well, how much do
Let's see. In the 1800s, that's about 4 weeks.
I know, because they were saying, like, the shirt when he was ripped. Remember when he was a little kid and he ripped the shirt?
Yeah.
The dad was like, I paid 50 cents for that shirt.
Yeah, $10 is an insane amount of money in that time.
I know, and there was like another episode where the little Laura had to have her horse had to have horseshoes, like all 4 feet, and it was going to cost, I think they said, $3.
Yeah, that's a lot of money back then.
Yeah, it was like, you know, so this guy's, he's working, and he's just dead tired, and he's sleeping out in the barn, and he, you know, and then... you know, they invited him to... Oh, yeah, here's what happened. Charles, on his last day, the guy decides he's going to leave town. He's going to move. He's going to go to San Francisco or just far away from everyone. And he's like, I don't need anyone. I don't need anyone's love. I don't need anybody, blah, blah, blah. Charles gives him a bonus, you know. He gives him a nice shirt. And he says, we're going to be at church if you want to go. Ah, no, thanks, blah, blah, blah. Charles leaves. The guy opens up the present. He sees the shirt. He has a flashback to his childhood, back with that shirt when he was a kid. And he just starts ripping the shirt to shreds. Rips it to shreds. And then he just has...
You're going to rip it all the way.
Exactly. I know. Just like my dad told me in Chicago. Yeah. Right? So then Charles, he goes back for something. I forget what it was. They were like, hey, let's go ask him something or whatever. And then he sees the shirts all ripped up on the floor, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, holy cow. He must have had a crazy fit of rage. And then he... And then he goes...
Great detective work on his...
Exactly. Yeah. And then he goes to the grandparents' house to make sure that they're safe, but they're gone. They've already gone to church. And then he's like, I've got to go stop that kid. And then he goes and he finds him and he goes, is that any way to treat a gift? Da, da, da. And he goes, it's my gift. I could do what the hell I want with it. And yeah. Do you have any idea? Sometimes you like to guess where this leads to. Do you?
Let's see. He now owes, well, if the childhood shirt was $3, the adult shirt would be probably like $7.50.
He goes, we're even.
So he has to work till the end of the series.
Until he stops ripping up presents. No, yeah. It was a present. It was a gift. So it wasn't, he didn't have to pay it back or nothing. But then he starts trying to fight Charles, right?
Right.
He tries to fight Charles and Charles is, and is defending his moves. And then at one point he just starts throwing these haymakers and then Charles starts to wrestle with them. And then the kid like kind of hugs him a little bit and he goes, I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. And he has like this flashback to his dad. And he calls him dad, like, I hate you, dad. I hate you. I hate you. And then Charles just hugs him, right? And he goes, yeah. I hate you. And then the kid starts crying and he goes, I love you, dad. I love you, dad. Why did you have to die? I love you. Yeah, dude. It was like, whoa.
Yeah.
and then, by the way, that, go ahead.
It sounds like almost like a best of Little House on the Prairie. Like, because all of this stuff that you were saying, I was like, wait, didn't he already tell me this?
I know, right?
Oh, no, it's a different episode.
It's a different episode with a different lunatic from Chicago.
This is like they Frankensteined a bunch of episodes together into one story.
I know. And
you
then
know, like they took a bunch of other shitty things that people did, and they were like, let's just make it all one guy. One sucky kid. That might have been the name of the episode, One Sucky Kid.
I know, right? And then it cuts to the kid, you know, Charles goes to church. You think the show's going to end. And then the boy comes to church and sit with his grandparents. And then it pans out, zooms out. And then you hear, like, just to the outside of the church. And then you hear them singing their song, you know. And it's a happy ending.
Now, wait. How did he go to church with his shirt all ripped up?
I think he went with his original shirt that he was wearing before.
Oh, okay.
Before the gift. Like the Incredible Hulk or something.
Like he sewed it back together or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
I was thinking, too, I was like, if this got an applause from your son, I think the Incredible Hulk would blow his mind.
I know. Like, son.
Did you ever watch that show?
Oh yeah, and you know what's funny about that show? I love that show, The Incredible Hulk.
It was a great show.
My son calls it the Hulk because I guess it's called the Hulk now, but I called it The Incredible Hulk because that's the way I was raised.
Yeah, that was the full title, The Incredible Hulk. Yeah.
And from what I recall, my wife said they grew up with a black and white TV, and so they didn't know didn't know he was turning green. They just thought
what did they think was happening?
I knew they. Thought some, they just thought he was getting angry and maybe turning like a darker shade of maybe got an instant tan or something. I don't know what they thought, but
he's
like
Brazilian now. Oh, no.
Oh wow. Yeah,
and he's outraged about everything.
Because remember how his eyes, it would start with his eyes, right? His eyes would get that green color, and then what was his line? You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Yeah, there was that reporter that was chasing him from town to town.
Yeah.
And he finally like catches up with him once and he goes, Mr. McGee, you're making me angry. And you wouldn't like me when I'm angry. and then it cuts to like him turning into the Hulk and everything, you know.
And was it you that told me this, that he was originally Bruce Banner, but then they changed the name to David Banner?
Yeah, because it sounded more macho, more masculine.
That was like a big move back then, or any time, right? To change a character's name after the first season.
No, they actually did it right off the bat from the pilot on.
Oh.
But, like, what they did was kind of clever, where they just didn't like the name Bruce, and also they were like, there's already Bruce Wayne, and they, you know, they didn't want to muddy the water, I guess, and so they were like, and the show is basically The Fugitive, only when the fugitive's cornered, he can turn into a giant rage monster, you know. But so what they did, which was pretty smart, was they had him fake his own death at the beginning of the show.
Oh, the Incredible Hulk?
Yeah, like when he knows he's going to have to go on the run for the rest of his life, so he's not experimented on or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
He fakes his death, and you see a tombstone that says David Bruce Banner on it. And so that was like, technically his name was David, but he never really went by his real name. He was always like,
oh,
you know, whatever guy he was posing as in each town. And he would think, oh, this is the town that's finally going to leave me alone, you know, and just let me live my life in peace. And wherever he worked, it'd be like he'd be repairing video games at an arcade or something. Some punks would always come in and mess with him, and that was all she wrote. It was just a matter of time till his eyes started glowing. They would always throw him in like some, like the dumbest death traps of all time. But it was like, you didn't understand like why they cared that much. He was just a random drifter. But they'd be like, you stay out of our business. In fact, we're going to throw you in the old sawmill and cut your legs off or whatever. And so it was always during that he would Hulk out and beat the living crap out of everybody. Run off. And then you'd see him wake up and he'd be like, well, time to move again. You know?
Yeah.
Now everyone knows I'm in town.
And I think a lot of people that grew up watching that, probably in the back of their mind, they feel like once I get mad, I win fights. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they,
yeah.
You know, they don't have really any skills or training or
right.
They're just like, oh, once I get, I've even seen that as a trend on TikTok. They're like, it's something like, you know, like there's a voiceover and then people react to it differently. And one of the voiceovers like, I don't stay calm because I'm afraid of you. Because when I get mad, I get felonies or I get life in prison or something like right. that.
Like, yeah, I think a lot of people, like a lot of other things, they take on attributes from those characters and then get their asses kicked or something, you know.
Yeah.
One thing I love about the modern Marvel stuff is that they kind of did something with that was interesting, where the Hulk in the movies was kind of like the atomic bomb of the Avengers, where like if things really went wrong, they would just piss off Bruce Banner and he would turn into the Hulk and just go crazy and just beat up a bunch of stuff. And it would always really help them out. Well, then eventually it got to Infinity War, where Thanos is like coming to take over the universe. And Thanos is just as big as the Hulk, but he's got military training, you know?
Oh, wow.
And so you see the Hulk come out of nowhere. They're like, oh, we've ambushed Thanos, and they send the Hulk in, and the Hulk is beating him up, right? And then Thanos' underlings are like, should we do anything? And the one who knows it, Thanos best, is like, no, let him have his fun. And then the fight turns, and you see Thanos, who actually knows how to fight. It's not all rage.
Right.
He just cleans the Hulk's clock.
Oh, wow.
So bad that in the future, when Banner tries to turn into the Hulk doesn't want to come out. He kind of like broke him, you know. And
he's like, I don't have anger issues any longer.
Yeah, he's just like, no, I don't. Hulk, no, come out, you know. And so that led to like down the road, what they did was they made it where like him, like Bruce Banner and the Hulk kind of hashed it out and became one entity that they call Smart Hulk. because it's like this humongous Hulk, but it has the mind of David Banner.
Smart. And so that's hilarious. Smart Hulk.
He's like this humongous scientist, and they made him really fun and funny. The only thing I didn't like about it was they never gave him a rematch with Thanos.
Oh.
Where, like, there's that whole part where Thanos kind of wins, you know, he does the snap and, like, half of existence is gone, and there's a 5-year period before they can do anything about it, and I thought for sure, I was like, oh, in that 5-year period, he's going to train with Captain America, the best fighter in the world, and learn all these fight moves, and then he's going to have a rematch with Thanos, and it's going to be awesome. But they just kind of never did that. It just kind of, like, they dropped the ball on that one little aspect of it, you know?
Yeah, maybe eventually they'll do that. They'll do that eventually.
There are all these alternate timelines and stuff where they can do stuff like that. I've been watching She-Hulk. I don't know if you've watched that.
Now what is that? She gets angry too? She gets angry and trips out?
Well, the way it's set up is that she's his cousin.
Yeah,
and she's a lawyer, and they get in a car wreck and some of his blood gets into her system, and so since she has the same gene pool, she's able to process it, and it turns her into a Hulk also. But it's like the best of both worlds. She's basically the exact same person, only large and green and unstoppable.
Oh, wow.
And so the full name of the show is She-Hulk Attorney at Law. And so she's this attorney that can turn into the Hulk when things start going wrong.
She starts losing a case.
But it's kind of fun. It's like they took like all the like regular court dramas and made like a really sort of fun superhero show out of them. Like, the first guy that she has to defend is the Abomination, who was the Hulk's main villain in the first movie. And you kind of hear his side of it, and after he's done telling his side, you're like, shit, she should defend him. He's actually makes a really valid case for why he did all the stuff he did, you know?
Hey, by the way, on one of the episodes that we talked about recently, you told me about a scene with Danny DeVito on Taxi, and I want to give shout out to Christopher McCray. He sent me the episode. He found it on YouTube. So if you guys want to watch pilot episode, the first episode of Taxi, which I'd never seen, and I don't think I ever really watched a lot of Taxi episodes, and man, I love that first episode. It was so good.
Yeah.
It was so good. You were right, man. It was there's a scene where Danny DeVito, because he just plays this rough and gruff guy, and he's up there in that cage, and then and at one point he goes, "Don't make me come down there and get tough with you." And then when he and it looks so funny because they're all lined up and they all look like they're about somewhere between 5'9" and 6'1", and then there comes Danny DeVito, and he, especially after saying, "Don't let me come down there and get tough with you," and then you realize, like, whoa, this big menacing boss guy is like 4'11".
4 feet, yeah, you know, 4 feet like, tall, something like that, you know. And but that show set itself up so brilliantly. Like, it's almost a perfect pilot, really.
It really is. You know, let me ask you, because I don't know all the characters, but did you happen to rewatch that first episode, by any chance?
No, but I watched it recently enough, I think.
So here's my question. So Judd Hirsch, what's his character? Do you know his character's name?
I don't.
Well, it doesn't matter, but it seems to be like he's, okay. So when Mary Lou Henner comes in, and I don't know her name, but I just know her as Mary Lou Henner. She was like, "Yeah, I'm really going to try to, you know, I just want to do this part time. I really want to do this other thing." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, they're all part-timers." And he points at Tony Danza, and he's like, "He's a boxer." And then he points at Jeff Conaway, I think his name is.
He's an actor.
He's an actor, and he's pointing at the different, and this guy's a this, and this. And then what was great about that episode was they...
Alex. Alex is his name, Judd Hirsch's character.
Oh, Alex, yeah, Alex. And So Alex, they discover, somebody discovers that, hey, there's this payphone. You could put a quarter in, but your quarter comes right back out if you take this part of the payphone off. And so then they each get to, you know, make a free phone call. They're like, oh my God. And they're all the cabbies are lined up to make these free phone calls. And,
yeah.
And, you know, it was just set up so beautifully. Like Jeff Conway's character, is it Conway or Conaway?
Conaway.
Conaway, yeah. Like not Tim Conway, it's Jeff Conaway. So
yeah.
He wants to
call. He was also in Greece.
Yes. Yeah, I remember him from Greece. And I remember he wanted to call, was it Laurence Olivier? He wanted to call another actor, but then the actor was on stage and he's like, and what would you like us to tell him? And he's like, tell them I said, and he starts clapping. Bravo. Bravo. It was just funny. And then Tony Danza, he wants to call a massage parlor back in Vietnam. And he's like, yay, number 12 or whatever. And he's like, how many times did you go there? You know, whatever, 22 times. Well, how long were you there? One day.
Yeah.
Think she'll remember me? Oh yeah, she'll remember you. You know, that kind of thing.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty funny, man. It was like, and then there was like all these gags that they did, like that. Anyway, so that was so then Alex is.
But notice how each of the gags tells you a lot about each of the characters.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I was really caught up in this story with Alex. He apparently he had a daughter that he'd never. He'd only raised her for 2 years, and then the mom took off with another man, and so he hadn't seen the daughter for 15 years. Long story short, he takes the quarters to call the mom. She's like, she's going to college in Portugal. What? But she has a layover in Miami. So then all the cabbies get in a cab, and they drive all the way to Miami. He sees the daughter. I wanted to ask you this because I'm unfamiliar with Taxi. It was a great scene that he got to finally see his daughter and a very touching moment. She's like, what do you remember about me? And he was saying little details that he remembered. And then they actually embraced and gave a hug. Was that part of the show? Did he eventually get to see the daughter again that you know of? Or
do you want me to spoil it? Or?
Yeah.
I don't believe he does.
Oh.
Like in the amount of, now that's in the amount of episodes that are available on streaming. I don't know if they are more,
right?
Because I don't know if that show got like a finale.
Hmm.
I think it just kind of ended. I think it was back when they would just cancel things, you know.
Oh.
And because the last episode I remember seeing was Lotka. You know, Andy Kaufman and his girlfriend played by Carol Kane.
I know that name from somewhere.
Yeah. You'd know her if you saw her.
She's
a brilliant, brilliant character actress. And she's still working today.
Mm.
She was in Scrooged. She was the Ghost of Christmas Present. And the one that beats up Bill Murray.
Yeah.
You know, and, but the last episode was kind of about them, and it was just kind of like another episode.
Mm.
It wasn't like the end of the series or anything, you know.
Mm.
So I don't think they ever reconnected. They might have,
though. Wow.
But I don't recall that.
Yeah, it was really touching. I was like laughing, you know, like that's what's perfect, right? When you're laughing, and then all of a sudden. It hits you with the feelings of like, oh, wow.
You know? Like if you were writing the last episode, that would definitely be like her coming to visit him or something would be a great like final note for the series. You know?
Yeah. That was great though. I'm so happy you told me about that and I got to watch it. I was really happy it was available on YouTube. I was like, that's so cool.
Like, did we talk about the final episode of Cheers?
No, let's talk about it.
Because it was really pretty brilliant what they did. Where, you know, through the first part of the series, Sam is in love with Diane, and it's will they, won't they there. And then in the second part, it's Rebecca. And, you know, she burns down the bar, but there's still something between the two of them, you know. And, you know, the bar gets rebuilt and it's another will they, won't they sort of thing.
Right.
And
right.
So then we get to the final episode and Diane comes back and Rebecca's there, and you kind of think, oh, it's going to be a choice between those two. You know, Sam's going to have to decide which one he truly loves, and that'll be how the episode ends. Well, what ends up happening is Diane goes off to do her own thing, Rebecca goes off to do her own thing, and Sam's left there at the bar, and Norm is trying to make him feel better. And, you know, Norm is the only other character there that's, he's been in that bar as long as Sam has, even longer. And he's watching Sam, you know, polish the bar and like clean the glasses and stuff like that. And he goes, well, I, you know, honestly, I think it all worked out. And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know, everyone ended up with their true love. And Sam goes, well, what do you mean? Who's my true love? And he looks around the bar and he goes, think about it, Sam. And then he gets up and leaves. And so the final shot is Sam with his true love, the bar. And then someone knocks at the door. You don't see their face, but it's one of the first shots, I think, of someone outside the bar looking in. You see him through like the window and the door, and he just says, sorry, we're closed. And that's the end of the series.
Wow.
And it's such a powerful, like, if you do think about it, it's such a powerful end of that show of going like, yeah, sometimes what you do is the love of your life, you know?
Like this episode.
This episode is more like an acquaintance.
This is like a, it's like an acquaintance for you, but to me, it's the love it's of the my love life. Of your life. This is, yeah, it's an acquaintance. Like, it's a one night stand. You're going to be moving on to other podcasts.
Yeah. I'd like to remain friends with this episode.
Yeah, and of course, like, you know, MASH was a great final episode that everyone, you know, I think it had like one of the highest ratings for the longest time.
Is that the episode, because I didn't really watch a lot of MASH because I found it really depressing for some reason.
Even the theme song, you know, suicide is painless, yeah. Suicide. Oh, God.
My friend, my buddy Alf is a great guy, but he sometimes when you grew up on a thing, you find it more entertaining. Like Little right. House
yeah.
is a good example.
Exactly.
But, like, he had grown up on the movie of MASH, and he took me to a theater with him to see it. I am not the world's biggest Robert Altman fan. I think a lot of his stuff is boring, and MASH was triple boring. I was like, holy shit, this movie is terrible.
Yeah.
Unwatchable. And we're over at the New Beverly, and I keep nodding off because it's so dreadfully right. boring to me. But I don't know if you have you seen the movie of MASH?
No.
Okay. It's like, I want to say early 70s cinema where you could get away with stuff like this. One of the big hijinks in the movie is that they have a football game. Oh, how crazy in the middle of a war to have a football game.
Right.
It, you know, it's, they're basically doing what Apocalypse Now did with surfing, but slower and more tedious. But the thing is, Robert Altman doesn't edit anything. So he shot the entire frickin' football game from beginning to end. So in the middle of that movie, there's an entire football game of actors playing football and right. doing terribly. And each down, they would, the running gag was they would cut back to guys dressed as cheerleaders going da 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 da. So every minute and a half, I nod off successfully, and I'm woken up by this horrible gag in the movie. It was the most miserable movie going experience of my life. I hated it so much. And so when I hear that song, I get nauseous. I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, gosh.
That stupid-ass show is probably on right
I know.
Now.
It's one of those things my wife said whenever she'd hear that. She was like, change the channel. It's like, yeah. Change the channel.
Is that the taxi?
No, that's the MASH theme song.
Oh, it's yeah.
Dun,
yeah.
Dun, 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 dun,
Jesus. Dun, 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 thank God dun, they left the lyrics out on the TV show.
Suicide is painless.
Yeah, and, now to be fair, to be totally fair, I watched the show, the TV show.
Yeah.
And the studio, I think, gave them a lot of notes. They're like, look, if you're going to make this into a show, it can't suck like that movie did. And so the show is a lot better. And they had
Hot Lips Houlihan
stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And like Alan Alda is really good on the show. And everyone on there had really good comedic timing. But there's also, it's still, MASH is just one of those things that it's a curiosity how it was a hit, because it was like, it was a sitcom set in a war in a hospital. You're seeing blood and guts and people dying and getting disfigured, everything like that. And then someone will make a joke that if you did that in an actual triage situation, someone would punch you right in the face. You know, if you made a joke about, well, you think of it this way. You only have to buy half as many shoes now. You know,
you can work at IHOP.
That guy would murder you. Yes. The guy who just had his leg amputated, he would stab you in the heart. But even worse, they added a laugh track to it.
Oh.
Like, where the hell is the audience? There's no audience in the war.
I know.
It was just a ridiculous show.
Speaking of old jokes, you know, I found this old joke book, and I was like,
that was a hell of a segue.
Hell of a segue. If only there was a laugh track. But
yeah.
See if you'll get this joke. By the way, do you hear the AC in the background? Should I turn it off? Do you hear that? Or does it matter?
I don't hear it.
Oh, good. Okay. As long as the... Sounds like applause, maybe. I don't know. But do you know this joke? Did I tell you this one? Remember, this is an old joke book. What is 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1?
I don't know what.
Bo Derek aging.
Oh. A terrible joke.
I know, it is terrible. And I told somebody that joke, and they go, shouldn't you update the name? And I'm like, no, the reason that it's a joke is because Bo Derek was in a movie called 10, like she's the perfect 10, but...
And they didn't, they were like, I'm not old enough to have seen that.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, yeah. Before you get to any jokes, hopefully you... Do you have any jokes? Because I love when you tell jokes. You tell great jokes.
I don't have any. I didn't know there was going to be a quiz.
All right, here's another joke, and I was going to save this for another guest because he's big into wrestling, but you get the privilege of hearing this joke. So there's this American wrestler, and he's on his way to the Nationals, right? And then he goes to the Olympics, and when he's in the Olympics, he goes against this Russian, and they're both undefeated. Who's going to win? And he tells them, he goes, well, you got to be careful because the Russian, he's got this move called the pretzel, where he takes you and he bends you and he folds you and he winds you up like a pretzel, and this guy's never lost, and we don't have any footage of him, and we don't know what it looks like when he does it, but he wins his thing, right? So then they get into their final match. Boom. Head to head. The Americans undefeated. The Russians undefeated. But in the back of his mind, he's like, I'm a little nervous about that pretzel move. The coach says, don't lose focus. You have to concentrate. Don't even for a second lose focus because you can win. Boom. They're wrestling. He's winning. And out of nowhere, the Russian starts to get the upper hand. And for a split second, the American's like, oh no, I think he's going to do the pretzel on me. And then just in that time, boom, folds him up, twists him up, puts him in the pretzel. The referee comes in, slaps the mat once, twice. And then out of nowhere, you hear, ow! The Russian jumps up 3 feet. The American gets him and pins him and wins. Yay! Afterwards, they said, what happened? He goes, the American goes, I looked up and I saw this testicle hanging there, so I bit it. And let me tell you, when you bite your own testicle, you'd be surprised what you can do. All right.
That's a good joke.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right. Why'd the rooster walk across the basketball court?
Why?
Because you heard the referee was blowing fouls. All right, that's enough of.
Those are all. They're not bad. They're not terrible.
They're not bad. They're not terrible. They're kind of funny. They. Did I tell you the one about? This is the dirtiest one I have. Did I tell you? I may have told you the one about the mouse and the elephant.
Tell me again. I don't think.
Folks, if you're listening at work, you might want to put the earbuds in. If you have children in the room, you might want. All right, so this mouse is walking through. He's real cocky, you know. He's just about, you know, he's a little mouse, but he's got a little hat on, a little cabbie hat, and he's got a cigarette, and he's walking through the jungle. And this elephant, he gets closer, and he hears this elephant moaning. And he walks up, and he goes, "What's wrong, elephant?" And the elephant, she looks down, and she goes, "I have a thorn in my paw, and I can't get the thorn out. I need help." And the little mouse is like, "Hold on a second." And he yanks it out, takes a thorn right out. And he goes, "There you go, off you go." And the elephant goes, "Oh, how can I ever repay you?" And he goes, "You know, I've always had fantasies about making love to an elephant." And the elephant looks down at this little tiny mouse, and she's like, in her mind, she's like, "Well, I'll flatter him and give him a quick little, you know, romp."
Yeah. What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know. So then the mouse is like, "Hold on a second." So then the mouse, he starts gathering all these banana leaves, you know, so he can stack them up super high. Finally, it's about 5 feet high. Mouse climbs up there. He approaches the elephant from behind. He turns his hat backwards, and he grabs her as much as he can on the hips, and he starts pumping away, right? And he's like, "Yang, yang, you like that?" And the elephant's like, "Oh goodness, oh goodness, oh goodness." He's like, "Yeah, yeah, you like that?" And she's like, "Oh goodness." Now there's a monkey up in a tree, and he looks down, he can't believe it. He sees this mouse banging this elephant, and he starts giggling so hard, he starts shaking the tree, and these coconuts, bam, land right on top of the elephant's head. The elephant roars her hair back, and she's like, "Oh God." And right then the little mouse goes, "Take it, bitch."
That one's so stupid.
It's so stupid.
Since we're telling dirty ones,
okay.
Since everyone has already got their earbuds in, this reminded me of just yesterday. I was talking to my dad about the great Buddy Hackett. He only had one special on cable that I'm aware of. And it was fantastic. It's because it's all jokes like that, but he was such a great character that they were all phenomenal. But at one point he looks in the front row and he sees there's a little boy in the front row, and he goes, "Your parents brought you to this show? I'm really dirty." He goes, you can't tell any of these jokes, can you?" And the kid shakes his head and he's like, no. And he goes, Well, I'll tell you a few, and you tell me which ones you can tell and which ones you can't. We'll start with this one. Why is 6 afraid of 7? And the kid, "I don't know." "Because 7, 8, 9. And the kid, "Oh, that's really funny." He goes, "Can you tell that one to your friends?" And he goes, yeah, I can tell that one." He goes, "How about this one? 2 Jews are fucking an owl. What, no good?"
That's funny.
It's one of my favorite things, like crowd interaction things.
That's hilarious.
Eddie Murphy did a similar one on one of his albums, like where a kid was like at the show and he was like, he goes, "I have a joke that you can tell to your friends. It's more like a kid type joke." And he goes, "A rabbit is taking a poop in the woods, and a bear comes up and he starts pooping too. And it's kind of awkward, you know, a bear and a rabbit pooping next to each other."
Yeah.
And finally the bear breaks the silence and goes, "Hey, rabbit." "Yeah, what?" "Do you have any trouble with poop sticking to your fur?" And the rabbit goes, no, I don't. I never really have any trouble with that." So the bear wipes his ass with the rabbit.
Oh, gosh.
I love that it's like it starts out seeming like a joke that the kid might be able to get away with, and then it's like, nope, probably not.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. Now this was a not so much a joke, but it was in the joke book, but it was more like an observation. Because I guess the guy that wrote this book was a cab driver, and he was, and so it's every now and then he'll throw in like real observations or real things that happened to him.
Yeah.
Or things that, you know, he said that there was a passenger and he was a jazz musician, and he's, and the jazz musician said, he goes, "Music is a splendid art, but a sad profession." And he writes, "As I drove my cab down the street, I had a feeling I knew what he meant. Music is a splendid art, but a sad profession."
Yeah. That for some reason reminded me of the movie Arthur with Dudley Moore.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a line in there at one point where he's talking to his fiance, who he just knows is totally different from him and it's not going to work out. And but she's kind of in love with the idea of him. Like that he's this project that she can shape up and, you know, turn into a good husband. And at one point he says, "Not everyone who drinks is a poet. Some of us drink because we're not poets."
Wow.
That movie is really good. It's another like 70s. To me, it's the anti-MASH.
Yeah, like, I bet you there's these movies that
in it is very good. You know,
I bet you there's those movies you could go back. I could go back and watch and get something out of it, because I remember seeing it as a kid and I liked it because I liked that, you know, the Christopher Cross songs. You know, if you get caught between the, and it just seemed funny, like this guy Arthur laughing, like ha ha ha.
Yeah.
You know, and as an adult though, I might watch it and think of it. I might see things I didn't even pick up, you know, when I was younger.
Oh yeah, and like Sir John Gielgud gives an amazing performance in that movie. He plays his butler, who's really more like his caretaker. And but yeah, I gravitated to it as a kid because he was basically like someone refusing to grow up.
Mm.
So, like, I think as kids you identified on that level with it, but as an adult you see that and you see it's like, oh, it's actually kind of tragic that,
yeah,
you know, that he's like that, you know. And but the movie, everyone in it is really good. Liza Minnelli and Dudley Moore, they're both, they have such a fun chemistry in that movie, you know.
I got one last joke, and I got this one from a YouTube comment section.
Okay.
There was somebody wrote in the comment section, wrote, I was at a nightclub and I was on the dance floor, and when the DJ played Jump, I jumped. When the DJ played The Twist, I did The Twist. When the DJ played Come On Eileen, security kicked me out.
That's not a bad joke. That's pretty good.
I know. I was like, that's kind of funny. It's like,
yeah.
Come on, Eileen. I know, right? Yeah. There was a lady I remember she used to live down the street, and she was like, my husband's name is Ken and my name is Eileen. And that was kind of how I remember her name, from that Come On Eileen. I was like, that name association, you know.
Yeah, that was a pretty good song too.
That was especially for me. That was like that great time of like the 80s, you know. And I was in eighth grade, I want to say, and like,
yeah, you know, it had a good video, you know. It was like kind of like small town London, I think.
Did you happen to watch the MTV Music Awards last night?
No, I didn't.
It was one of those things where, like, I actually recognized a couple of, because there's some years, especially in more recent time, where I'm like clueless. I'm like, I don't know who anyone is, and
right,
you know, and but I actually started recognizing some of the songs because of like TikTok and Instagram, like they're those popular songs that people use for their sounds. But
right,
you know, I just, and I know I sound like an old guy, but dude, I just think the music we grew up with was so good. I mean, you know,
yeah,
I just feel it was, you know.
Like, I think there's some great stuff out there now, but it, you know, I think part of it is nostalgia.
Yeah.
But part of it is like, you listen to like Elvis Costello or Cyndi Lauper or someone like that, and it's like, no, this is actually really good. Like, the lyrics are really well written, and some of the stuff they did musically with, like, different instruments and different tones and, right, and different, like, ways of editing a song or producing a song, some of it was like, they're still kind of catching up to it today. That there was just a vibe that was going on at that time.
Yeah, I just remember, like, one great song after another was just hitting the radio. And then back then, like, you'd change stations and there'd be, like, three, you know,
yeah,
a good song on each station. And, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, there was definitely some crap that was put out, but...
I mean, even, like, our bubblegum had, like, pathos, like 99 Red Balloons, you know, it was like...
Right.
That song is like a Cold War anthem in a weird sort of way, you know?
Yeah. No. Or remember that other song? Oh, Mickey, you're so fine. You're so fine. You're no, Mickey.
Yeah.
Do. You
that
know?
Video was perfect. It was a perfect video. A girl, you know, like, they realized, oh, this is kind of a cheer, you know? And so they had her do this whole cheerleader thing.
And not only was that good, even, yeah. I was going to say the word, like, yeah.
Go ahead.
The Weird Al Yankovic parody was great. Remember, like, oh, yeah, I'll say you're so fine. Oh, Ricky.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
Yeah, he was amazing. You'd look at, like, some of the stuff they did just with videos was so revolutionary, like the Take On Me video.
Oh, yeah. Which that filter's making its rounds right now on Instagram and TikTok.
The one that is kind of like doesn't get the props it deserves anymore, but it was at the time, it was blowing everyone's mind, was the Alan Parson Project. You remember that video?
I am the eye in the sky.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was cool. Herbie Hancock did a video all like robot parts.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Billy Idol, Dancing with Myself, the whole video idea was a post-apocalyptic world where he was the last survivor.
Wow. I didn't know that.
And he's on a rooftop and they're all these like radiated zombies coming to destroy him. And he's like, it's my last, I'm the last person and this is my last moment. So I'm going to dance by myself.
Wow.
And it's such a crazy concept for a video. But wow, it's so cool at the same time.
That's so funny. I never saw the video. So I thought, I didn't know what I thought. I actually, growing up, I thought Dancing with Myself was like, you know, alone time in the, you know.
I think that's kind of like the implication of it. Yeah. But the video for it was like, well, we can't do that.
So we can't show a guy whacking off for 3 minutes.
Yeah. Let's do this other thing that's actually really fucking cool, you know.
Yeah, and I'm dancing with myself. Ho, ho, ho.
But yeah, check that video out sometime. It's like, wow, they really swung for the fences with this. The Cars had that great video. You might think I'm crazy.
Oh, yeah. See, yeah.
The one where they're really tiny and they're on this gigantic model and they're like,
oh, yeah,
singing to her and all this other weird stuff is going on.
What's that other song? And then speaking of those kind of videos, like Simply Irresistible with all the hot girls with the slick back hair and the sunglasses.
Well, that guy, I forget his name.
Robert Palmer,
yeah. He didn't just do that video. He tripled down on it. He did two other videos that were basically the same exact concept. Mm. And not only were they all wildly successful, he then came back and did like a Pepsi commercial with all of that.
And
it got, all of it got parodied all over the place. And then there was like, not only did we have like stuff like that, but like the way it was showcased, like there was the Max Headroom show.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Where it was like the faux, he was supposed to be the first computer generated character, but it was really like makeup and tricks and stuff, but he looked like it, you know. And that character was such a cool idea of like a virtual reality program, like cheesy host, you know.
I know.
and it kind of was like making fun of everything going on in the 80s, and then it became it because it ended with like Max Headroom was this cool underground sort of thing that only like kids that were really hip knew about. And then within 5 years, he was selling new coke, you know.
Exactly.
It was like he became everything that he was supposed to be parodying, you know.
I know. That'd be like me at the, I'd be like, you know, I actually don't start parties. I end them, and I have this new service. And what we do is we go from party to party, and we stop these parties.
Yeah.
But Mike, I had a great time talking with you, and thanks again for sharing part of your day and with us and the listeners. And any parting words? Anything you'd like to say? Any words of wisdom or words of gratitude?
Let me try and think. Okay, an 80s lyric that kind of sums up how the world is right now from the Police. And the lyric is, when the world is running down, make the best of what's still around.
I like that. That's true. We still got ice cream. We still got pizza. We still got hiking trails. We still got friends we can call. We still got birds outside that are singing and trees that are blowing in the wind.
Yeah, we have all of that stuff for like 8 more months.
We still have leaf blowers.
Make the best of it.
Yeah, I know.
Until you're that last guy on the roof.
I know. I was in the pool earlier.
Radiated zombies coming to kill you and then just dance your ass off.
Exactly. I was going to say, I was in the pool earlier this weekend, and man, there was something about swimming. Just like, man, it's like it takes you to another world. For me, it always takes me back to high school when I was on the swim team. And I only swam 1 year. It wasn't that good, but I finally made varsity, but that was it. And, but I just remember being in that swimming pool going, man, this is almost like that scene from Cocoon. You do feel young. I felt young again. Cocoon. Like when I'm going up a hill, I feel tired, you know, like I'm out of breath, or when I'm running, I don't feel like I'm fast. But when I'm swimming, I'm like, man, I'm still floating. Like I'm 16. This is great. You know?
Yeah.
Even though I'm way heavier, but, you know, even though back, even when I was 16, I didn't have to shave my back, but still.
Yeah, you go through a period where you make fun of everyone else's hairy back, and then God turns it around on you.
I know, exactly. I know, you're like, But anyways, all right, man. Hey, have a good one, and I'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Mike.
All right, great talking to you, buddy. Have a great one.
You too, bye. You guys, thanks again for laughing with us, hanging with us. And if you get a chance, leave some comments on YouTube, and we'll talk to you soon. Darren Carter, Party Starter. I'm going to go out and enjoy my day. Love you guys. Bye.